It's time for the True Sports Card Show, the only one-hour radio show that gives you the very latest in sports memorabilia news from around the world. Here are your hosts, industry expert Imran Palladi and Sactown Sports 49ers insider Emil Fragoso.
Good morning, everybody. It's Imran Palladi and Emil Fragoso here at the Sactown Sports Studio. Thank you for joining us for the True Sports Card Show. This hour is going to be jam-packed with information, specifically with our interview with the card father himself, Rob Veras from Burbank Sports Cards. He'll be joining us in just a minute. Emil, how are you feeling? You said that you feel good today.
I'm feeling fantastic. Another great show here on the True Sports Cards and Collectible Show here on Sactown Sports. Just happy to talk sports cards. Happy to talk to the card father. I feel like I'm not worthy to talk to the card father, honestly.
Rob is one of the most humble dudes that I've met, even though he does have his moments, which is he deserves it. I mean, you put those kind of decades into the industry, you deserve to have the accolades poured upon you. All right, so right after this, I'm leaving the studio. I'm driving straight to Concord. There's a Concord card show. So I'm already there. Our team's already there. I'll be joining them. I'll probably get there around 1 or so. So if you're going to be at the Concord card show, you'll see me there. Pete and AJ are already there. Also, our store is open there at True Sports Cards. We're going to be opening. We just opened 3 minutes ago.
Wow. Yep. Look at that.
So come on by the shop, 6661 Stanford Ranch there in Rockland. We'd love to see you. All right. So before we talk to Rob, I just wanted to go over a couple of things. First of all, we have the Auburn card show, which is going to be held in your hometown of Loomis.
Yeah.
So you think about the Auburn card show in Loomis. That's going to be held next Saturday from 10 to 5. It's going to be held at the Blue Goose Event Center.
Lovely place.
First time that I've
ever been.
Have you been there?
Have you seen it yet?
Nope.
Oh, it is spectacular.
Okay.
A huge wide open space, very vintage, kind of wooden panel kind of stuff. It looks very, very nice.
All right. So just to be very clear, our team will be there and we are buying cards.
Yes.
If you have cards that are $20 or more and you're interested in selling, now's the time to sell it to us. We are in need of cards. So we will be buying not only at the store, but we'll also be buying there at the card show. I'll be buying today in Concord. I'll be buying next week at the Blue Goose Event Center there at the Auburn Card Show in Loomis. And then I wanted to kind of make a quick highlight of what's coming next week, in particular one specific brand. It's going to be the Bowman Draft.
Yes.
2023 Bowman Draft Baseball. Emil, I know you have some of the statistics on that. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that product?
I do, yeah. So Bowman Draft Baseball comes in a variety of hobby variations. There's Hobby Jumbo Pack, Hobby Box Break, there's Super Jumbo. But just on Hobby Jumbo, 2 Chrome Refractor Parallels, 23 base cards, 7 base Chrome cards. And then for the Hobby Jumbo box, it's 3 autographs, 1 base Chrome Sky Blue Parallel. So there are a bunch of variants and a bunch of different things in this product. But what makes this product so unique, Imran?
There's 2 prospects that are the chase, and then 1 old man who happens to be 46, same age as me. The prospects that you're going to be chasing in there are Wyatt Langford of the Rangers and Colin Hawk of the Mets. Those particular players are who you're chasing in this. Mm-hmm. Now, the Bowman Draft Jumbo, it's paper. There's some chrome in it, but it's mainly paper. It's going to be over $500 a box when that comes out, but it's worth it. Now, there's a specific older gentleman that you're collecting in this
thing. I know. I see a mock-up here.
Thing. So they made the announcement. Tom Brady, the GOAT, the football GOAT, will be in this product, and he's going to be wearing a Montreal Expos jersey. Now, this is from when he was young. He was drafted by the Expos in the, I believe it was the 18th round, and he has a chase card, just a Brady card, non-signed. You'll find 1 in every 15 Super Jumbo boxes and 1 out of every 23 hobby boxes. So the ratio of getting it, it's worse than a case hit. I mean, it's really tough to get, let alone the fact that he has signed versions of that card in this product.
Which, not only in signed, but inscribed. I'm looking at a mock-up here, and it's talking about, it says,
that's an actual sign. It's not a mock-up.
That's the real card.
Yeah.
Wow. Allows, it says, Allos Ox Expos, I think is what it says.
Is that what it says?
I might be French. I'm trying to read it, honestly.
Well, there's another one that he has. It says, if this doesn't work out, there's always football. Okay, so this is product that's being dropped into.
That's awesome. Yeah,
right now. So I just wanted to say that that product's going to be on our shelves next week. We will be having that available. Again, it's going to be over $500 for that product. But Bowman Draft is one of the most interesting and sought after products every year. The fact that it's dropping the last month of the year, it's just what it is, and it's going to be coming out, so we'll have that soon. Okay, so that's all I wanted to make sure that we mentioned. We're going to take that quick break in just a minute. We're going to have Rob Veras from Burbank Card Shows right here at True Sports Cards Hour on Sactown Sports 1140. Hey, everybody, it's Emran Pilati, Emil Fragoso here on Sactown Sports 1140 on the True Sports Card Show. Welcome back. And we're here with Rob Veras, a.k.a. the Card Father from Burbank Sports Cards. Rob, how are you?
We are not worthy.
Oh, man, I'm better than fine, man. Just living the dream. Get to play with sports cards all day. And today I get to talk sports cards on the radio. How can I be better?
Rob, I don't know if you know this, but we're, I think, the only one-hour sports card show in the nation that's on the radio. You've been on a million podcasts. I've been a podcast host for many years. But here we are on the actual radio. So we've got a 13-second dump. Any kind of cuss words, don't worry. We'll catch it. So, anyway, Rob, you may not remember, and I don't expect you to, but you were a catalyst in me opening my shop here in Northern California at the True Sports Cards. I flew down there to Burbank, and I was told, go check out shops to kind of get your inspiration as to what you wanted in your shop. So obviously I had known about you. I'd known about your eBay store. And I went down there and I said, hey, my name is Emran. I'm going to open a shop later this year. I just wanted to check out shops. And you were like, bro, come to the bat. Come check it out. I have videos of 2021 summer when we were going through the back of your warehouse. And this was before you opened the new retail location. And you couldn't have been more hospitable. And so I just wanted to start off by saying you really were an inspiration of how I wanted to run my shop. I was just so thankful for the time that you put in. And it really shaped us into being what I'm hoping is the most successful shop in Sacramento and the entire area. I know that people love our shop, and a lot of it had to do with the catalyst of what you shared with me. So I had to praise you first before we go down this path of conversation. So thank you very much for everything you've done.
By the way, I do remember the conversation.
I remember you pulling shelves out of where your son had bought for the store. And you had, I mean, you were thousands deep in still needing to price and comp and all that stuff. I'm sure that that's gotten just a ton better since then. I'm sure of it.
Yeah, my son can spend money, that's for sure.
You know, it's funny.
he's a legend when it comes to that.
Pete, our buyer of my store, is physically at the Concord Card Show right now, and I'm watching my PayPal right now, and I'm like, oh my God.
Yeah.
But that's what happens.
Yeah, I know. Ryan actually set up at the premiere show. My partner in the Burbank Card Show, Jay, set up in Burbank, which is great, at the Marriott where we had our first show, and Ryan setting up there to buy, and literally we could have stanchions in a line just to get to him at a card show. It's crazy.
So with that said, Rob, why don't we start with your origin story? Give me the 1 or 2 minute, how we got here, how you got here, how you became the Card Father, just whatever you can share with us to get us caught up for the listeners that are getting to know you for the first time.
Yeah, it goes back to 1979. I was 12 years old.
I was two.
What's that?
I was 2 years old. Go ahead.
Done without that, but that's okay. So, let's see here. So I was a coin and stamp collector mainly, and cards was kind of this thing that I did, you know, during the summer, you know, to pass the time. And all of a sudden, somebody asked me from the shop, the owner said, do you want to deliver flyers? Would you like a job? And, you know, as a 12-year-old, you're like, wow, I'm being offered a job. This is pretty cool. So got the okay from the parents. And basically, my first pay was 2 cents a house and 1 cent a car to deliver flyers for a coin and stamp shop. So made more money doing that, certainly, than allowance. And then he allowed me behind the counter to engage with customers, do retail, work on coins, work on stamps, learn a work ethic at a very early age. And then he allowed me to sell sports cards within the store. And so I put together Rob's Cards and Collectibles. And he gave me a couple shelves in the store, and they'd sell the cards during the week when I was in school, took 20%. And then I'd work weekends, I'd work summers, and you can't buy an education like that. And that was huge. Just the ability as a kid to interact with adults And again, you don't get that in school. Learn how to buy over the counter. And when I was 22, we bought the business. And this was 1989. And he had coins, stamps, foreign, domestic, gold, silver, comic books. He was kind of jack of all trades, master of none. And I soon realized that sports cards was the biggest passion for me. And this is the fourth iteration of a retail store. We've tried to, you know, upgrade along the way. And, you know, always been involved in education, people coming through, you know, whether it's dealers, whether it's collectors, and kind of share the gained wisdom of the decades. And, you know, it makes me really happy to hear that we had, you know, some small part in maybe how you set your shop up or got the motivation to open a store. So that's pretty cool.
Love it. Here's where it comes into play as to where I got some inspiration on how I run my shop. So as of right this minute, we don't break. As of right this minute, we don't do repacks. As of right this minute, we don't do a lot of things. And we've concentrated on the customer service basis. Singles, some wax. It's a lot of what we do. But if I'm remembering correctly, and every morning or every other morning, I can catch you on Instagram, Burbank Sports Card. I believe it's Burbank Cards on Instagram. It starts with a good morning to you from you right around 8 o'clock in the morning. Mm-hmm. And you have some theory, some idea, something of inspiration to our hobby that you speak on. But what I've taken and gathered over the last 6 months is that you're not a breaker. You're choosing not to. You're right. Not doing repacks. You're choosing not to. You don't enjoy the gambling aspect of wax or buying into the hopes and dreams that you're going to pull something big for the money that you're spending. You're mm-hmm. eBay heavy. You're interested in the micro sales, a lot of cards online that sell on eBay for less than $5, and mm-hmm. strong singles market. Okay, so you are leaving a lot of money on the table, even though your company makes a lot of money.
Right.
Give me the theory behind this strong conviction of the direction that you've decided to take your shop in and how that helps. And I hate the word consumers. I don't like it because consumers are nameless, faceless people. We have right. customers. We face them. We see them every day. We hear them. We feel their pain when they open a box and they get Panini points. Like we, you know what I mean? We're not hidden behind some camera. We face our customers every day just like you. Tell me about the theory behind how you've decided to run your shop the way that you do.
Well, I think the first and foremost thing is look at it from the other side of the counter. I mean, what do you expect when you walk into a card shop? And that's first and foremost. You know, what is the selection going to look like? The organization look like? Will that dealer be able to provide liquidity where I don't necessarily have to bring money into the store? I can bring in cards and get some store credit, get some cash, whatever that happens to be. And just the collecting experience, the joy of getting that card that 5 years from now, you're going to look at it and go, I still enjoy this card. And, you know, with the breaking, it's just fractionalized gambling. And I'm not about that because, in my opinion, 85% of the people that engage in a break walk away disappointed. It's a disappointing experience. And I'm not about disappointing experiences. 100 people walk through my store. If 85 of them have a negative experience, I don't think that's positive. And for the industry to choose that as being the forward facing, you know, part of the industry, I don't see that as a positive thing. So we aim for 100% and we feel that we're closer to 100% than most. So whether it's repacks, with anything that creates fractionalized gambling and creates this extra margin where the odds of walking away satisfied financially are slim, but most importantly, walking away going, I want to keep these cards. Oh my God, every single card I got from this break or this repack fits perfectly into my collection. And I'm going to enjoy these cards 5 years from now. Unfortunately, most of it goes into a box and gets brought to Burbank when the box is big enough and they're taking a major haircut. And to me, that's not cool. I'm actually looking at an order over here that we got. It's for Darren Dalton cards. There's 157 cards in the order, and it's $110. That guy's going to get that package in the mail and absolutely lose their mind. Mm-hmm. I consider this person the silent majority. I do believe that 80% plus of the people that engage in sports cards are actual collectors. Mm-hmm. They're not involved in the breaks. They're not involved in the repacks. They do it for the love. They build collections. They get excited over $2 and $3 cards, and they're not going anywhere. They're not going to get burnt out. They're going to be around for decades and hopefully share that passion with someone else in the family and keep this going for generations. That's always been my thought process. Again, looking at it from the other side of the counter, I'm that tuba player that goes in the other direction, but it's worked for decades. And, you know, there's fleeting moments of hope, and then there's realities of ending up with a lot of stuff that you paid too much money for that you don't.
I recently made a decision for our shop, and it's been a tough one with my team. We decided to Chronozio and start scanning lower priced cards under $2 per card. Now, most shops shy away from that, or maybe even completely get out of that business, just donating or throwing the cards in the garbage, or just saying, hey, you know, these are penny cards, we're not going to carry them anymore. And I have a lot of people that will walk in and say, do you have this guy? And it's just some random person. And I know that there's a market for every card, and I just feel terrible about deciding that 97% of Prism cards in a box are going to go in the garbage or wherever they're going to go. There is a market for these, but shops have made the decision that it's just too much tedious work to satisfy the customer base that they're trying to sell to, because they want to sell $20 or $30 or $50 cards, as you and I both do. Rob, we both want that. But we also need to service the Darren Dalton 150 cards for 110 bucks, people. But they just they don't scale that way. Tell me about the 40 million card warehouse that you store. I've been in it. I sat there in awe. I go, that's not something I can do at the moment. Tell us about that and your eBay store that has over a million listings in there.
It started back in the late 80s. My mother, God rest her soul, worked with us. I mean, she was kind of the adult in the room. I was, you know, young. And, you know, back then, nobody was clicking on a keyboard to find cards. What were they doing? They were getting on the phone. Do you have these cards? And so organization was a must. And we were color-coded by year, by brand. You could get to things very, very quickly in our store. And this was before databases and online. And she wanted to be helpful. And anybody that answered the phone wanted to be helpful and get to that card quickly and say, that card's $3. We have it in stock. And when databases came along, we were very early adopters and, you know, had a conversation with Jim Beckett in 1998 or 99 that they wanted to make their database available online. And he wanted to make sure that our company was involved, and we're able to scale things very, very quickly because he already had the nomenclature, you know, the titles, already had the pricing, and already had the ability to push the cards online, which was a huge turning point for our business. And then the next real turning point was going to eBay and being able to put things out in mass. But the real pain point with eBay, and you guys know it, and by the way, talking to you, I feel like I'm talking to a twin. I don't.
We look the same too.
Yeah. So I don't usually talk.
We're not related, Rob.
Okay. Go ahead, Rob. What do you mean by that? Talking to a twin. I mean,
it's just your thought process is very similar to mine, yeah. And I really talk to people that don't embrace the grind, that don't get the point that not everybody's looking for $50 cards. Mm-hmm. People are building collections, whether they're building a 75 top set, whether it's topical, it's people that just went to the University of South Carolina. Again, put yourself in their shoes. Would you be walking into a shop with your kid and automatically gravitating towards $100 cards and $500 boxes? Probably not. So with eBay, getting back to that, the big pain point was scanning, was images. It's the hardest part of the e-commerce equation. And I'm sitting there at home and seeing a late night commercial for these scanners, these document scanners, that, you know, can obviously, you know, print sheets of paper, but do business cards, do IDs, do all these different things. And they're 40 cards a minute, front, back, and auto crop, or 40 items a minute. And I'm like, if this works for cards, this changes my whole entire business, because eBay made the change where you had to have images. A ways ago, you didn't.
I remember that. I was an eBay power seller in the late mid-90s, and you could just list the card by name, similar to the way that we would do in newsgroups or, you know, with self-addressed stamped envelopes. This is, Emil, this was well before your time.
I wasn't born yet.
Yeah, so go ahead, Rob. I didn't mean to interrupt you there.
No, anytime. So I'm sitting there looking at this going, it's a $1,000 machine. And I'm like, we got to get one of those things and see how it actually works. Mm-hmm. So I get it. And I'm not a tech guy. So I hand it off to my guy. And he's like, Rob, we just scanned 81 tops, the complete baseball set, 726 cards. And it was 14 minutes. And I'm like, literally, that changes everything. Mm-hmm. We're going to be able to digitize all 1.5 million different cards in our warehouse. And you just start at point A, and eventually you get to point Z, which we did. We bought 9 machines, and we hired a small army, and we basically were able to digitize everything. And today, it's just a matter of scanning what's new. So if we load 22-23 SP Authentic Hockey, we get a nice stack, we load it into the software, boom, my guys are imaging that stuff right away and pushing it to eBay. It's the ultimate game changer. And we were real transparent with it. I actually created something called Beckett Business Solutions back in 2013, where we could marry Beckett's database, marry the technology, build out a database of images already for folks to use. And we got a discounted rate because if you remember, eBay had insertion fees, 3 cents, 5 cents, not a big deal if you have 100 cards, even 1,000 cards. But when you have over 1 million cards, now you're talking $30,000 to $50,000 a month just to list them, not final value. And so after 7 years of chasing eBay, finally worked out a deal with them, flew up there, signed a contract, and basically eliminated insertion fees where we could literally put millions of cards onto the platform and create a business to heavily discount it for folks as well. Didn't last all that long. Found out that people are incredibly lazy. They were wondering if we'd actually do the sorting for them. And I'm like, this will never work. So, but yeah. And then eBay just kind of, you know, scaled into a monster, you know, from just having something that my mom can answer a phone call about having sold 6.3 million cards on eBay. You know, it's just the everyday grind. You embrace it. You enjoy it. Mm-hmm. I'm in here 11 hours a day and I should be doing other things, but every card that comes through here goes through my hands.
Yeah.
And, you know, you have a certain system. It's hard to really explain it. And plus you enjoy it. You're like, I don't want people doing that. I actually enjoy this. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm just a card dork.
You're somebody that has so much, I hesitate to use the word pull, because it is a descriptive word of what you have. But I mean, you're the guy that had Michael Rubin in your shop, mm-hmm. right? That had that experience with that young lady that was a Devin Booker fan, and Michael Rubin breaks out his phone and FaceTimes Devin Booker so Devin Booker can talk to the young lady. She's in tears. The whole thing's happening at your shop. I mean, you're well known within the industry. That's why we're happy to have you on this show. But you know, you're seeing at the forefront customer trends, where it's going. Our market is a little softer than it was. I think that mediocre shops, sellers, people that are in our industry, they're the ones that should worry. I'm 23 years in real estate. Same thing follows in any industry. The good ones don't have to worry. The ones that are busting their butts, they don't have to worry. It's the ones that are mediocre or lazy. They're the ones that should be worried about in this market. Now, we've seen the trends come down. It's not buy the card today, sell it next week for 5X, right? Like it was during the pandemic. We actually have a grind with a margin now and small margins, and we have to do more sales in order to hit the same numbers. Rob, what are you seeing at the trends right now going into the first quarter? You have a big show that's coming up. We'll talk about that shortly. What are you seeing right now that customers want, collectors want?
I think that it's a positive that things have happened like this. I think that return on investment for the end user was awful. And I think that we literally almost eliminated a wave of people that came in 2020, early 2021, with the way things were 5X out of the chute and just everybody was just getting smoked on products. We lost a big wave of people. We didn't lose almost anybody that actually collected cards. Mm-hmm. I don't think that they went anywhere. But I think that our industry as a whole did a horrible job of dealing with this spike in demand and literally just keep raising the price of everything to help, you know, get through that. I personally don't mind when there's an economic recession, when there's a strike and these different things. I know my company is going to be strong coming out of it. But as a competitor, I also know that my competition is really going to struggle with it. A lot of it's going to go away and our piece of the pie is going to grow. That's just as being a competitive business person. And so things have slowed down now, but we've never sold more cards than we're selling right now because more people are walking away from the breaking culture, want to stay in cards, but they can't keep lighting their money on fire. And they're getting back to the joy of collecting. Mm-hmm. And I'm seeing that. And, you know, with the record sales we have on eBay and the sheer amount of people coming through our store, digging through cards and just remembering that it's a hobby. And it's tough as a retailer that walked into this, mm-hmm. opened a shop thinking it's only going to go up, walked into a shop thinking I can buy a box for $200 and sell it for $600. Now you're buying a box at $200 to sell it at $250.
That's right. And then they want to use a credit card, which will take 3% from the margins are there. I have people that walk in and they'll say stuff like, wow, that box is expensive. And they're pointing at it. And I go, yeah, how do you think I feel? I had to pay for it to put it on the shelf for you to comment how expensive it is. So,
right.
I've already made that commitment, mm-hmm. and you're commenting on the commitment. So it's understandable in that standpoint. But you're right, Rob. It's one of those where people are now looking at the joy of collecting, or if even in the investment, they're going to collect stuff that they like as an investment. Here in Northern California, Purdy, Niners, Kings, De'Aaron Fox, they'll say, "Look, I'll still buy. I just want to buy my guy for the investment. I want to, my player for the investment."
Yeah, cards are memories. And it's the closest thing to music, I think, is when you pick up a card, you might have forgot what you had for breakfast, but you remember when you picked up that Buster Posey autograph, mm-hmm. and it was your first Buster Posey autograph, and it really got the bug. And you sit there and you go online and you see all these cool Buster Poseys. And for a lot of people now, that's more of the adrenaline. That's more of the drug than just lighting your money on fire with a break and not getting any Buster Posey cards or any other mm-hmm. player that gets you excited. And the other part that people don't understand with having a shop and being in this business in general, whether you're setting up at a show or wherever, you're being showroomed constantly. Everybody walks around your retail business with a phone in their hands, mm-hmm. where literally you have to compete with a card that's sold that's no longer available. No longer can you just have the best price in town. No longer can you just have the cheapest price on eBay. Now in this market, you need to compete against a card that's sold that's no longer available. In what other retail space do I walk around with a phone and say, you know what, that last purse sold for $48,
so but you're true. Yeah. So true.
And I just, it's absolutely unbelievable that as retailers, you have to deal with that constantly, not just with boxes, mm-hmm. but for any single over $10 in your store. So you need to be competitive with all of that. Yeah. You have to worry about cards dipping in value, players getting hurt, players not performing. You put $100 into a card, guy got hurt the next day, now they're selling at $48. Most businesses, you buy something for $100, you're going to sell it for $125, $140, whatever it happens to be. In the sports card business, it's not necessarily like that. And a lot of shops that opened that only saw that, all of a sudden you're seeing, oh, wow, things can go down in value. Oh, wow, things mm-hmm. don't always 3X from the manufacturer. Oh, wow, we're not getting nearly the product that we were getting 3 years ago. Now we're getting 3 boxes instead of 10 boxes. And then you're chasing the product on the secondary market with everybody else. It's a really tough business. And people see it as fun. It's fun. But at the end of the day, it's a hard business.
Not fun to lose money. And here's one more point. I know Emil had some questions for you. But I just wanted to say this too. The breaking aspect has caused a lot of the market fluctuation because when somebody buys into a break, like you said, 85% of the people are going to be dissatisfied from, that's not a fact, for sure, but it's probably around that number. As we know, Rob, 82% of stats are made up on the spot. But but what I'm getting at is that the person that paid $50 into a break and hits a card that's worth, I'm using air quotes on radio, $1,000, they're only into that card for $50. So if somebody says, hey, I'll give you $400 for the card, even though they have comps at $1,000, they're like, I'm only into it for $50. I don't care. I'm making $350 if I sell for $400. And the rest of us now are hammered down and saying, well, the last six of them sold for $1,000, but this one sold for $400. So will you take $380? It's like, wait a minute. That's not how it goes. You have to look at the averages of how it's sold. Yeah. And just because somebody decided I was in it for nothing, so I'm going to sell it for nothing, doesn't necessarily mean that the card now is that's the end-all, be-all pricing for that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, comps are – I don't get it in a lot of cases. I think it's at the end of the day, it's a very lazy industry. People are usually striving for the low-hanging fruit, whatever their easiest way to do things is. And you look at comps, and it's basically only the cards that have sold online – get counted in your shop. You're selling cards all the time at different levels, but that's not put into the equation. We sell a tremendous amount of cards in our store, and the majority are over comps because we're retailers, because we have selection, we provide liquidity. People are selling us cards. They're getting store credit where the math says they're paying more than the latest comp. And unless there's people that can sell for more than the latest comp, it's a self-fulfilling drive to the bottom where if no one's willing to pay more for something than what the last one sold for, it's not rocket science. It's a problem. And so whether it's Fanatics putting cards on their own sites, whether it's Fanatics putting cards into stadiums and being able to get $60 for a card that the last one sold for $35, because all of a sudden it's in front of the wider audience. It's in front of just sports fans, not this narrow gap of collectors. That's what it's going to take for this market to rebound, for a lot of this inventory to get soaked up. And we do a great job of that, I think, is get our cards to a wider audience. Mm-hmm. But our sales in our shop aren't part of the equation. So I think it's a very incomplete snapshot of the value of a card. So that's my two cents on it anyways.
Yeah, Rob. So I've been a collector now for about a year and a half, and I've been switching to a lot more singles this year because, like you said, I get more satisfaction out of buying the card that I know, even though it's going to be more expensive than, you know, buying into a box or buying into a break. I get the satisfaction of knowing what I'm going to have. But do you feel like wax and breaks are kind of a necessary, I guess, evil of the hobby because it makes the circle go round?
Oh, no. I mean, I don't get singles over the counter if someone didn't rip a box. So there's that. But it also feels like someone drove it off the showroom floor in all cases, and the depreciation hit quickly. I'm not against box sales. We sell a tremendous amount of box sales. But when you get into the breaks, now you're paying this extra VIG as well. And your cost per card exponentially grows, which, you know, brings the return on investment down. Mm-hmm. There's a new site or Instagram account that, and I'm shocked that this hasn't happened years ago, that'll break down all the different breakers and what they're charging for the same breaks.
Yeah.
That hasn't been a thing for the last 3 years is beyond me. And it's jarring the differences in pricing from this one guy that's got this small VIG over opening the box yourself to these guys that are doubling up on the same break. And the funny thing that I find, because I'm not familiar in that world at all, is the companies that I've heard of are the most expensive. And I'm like, it makes a big difference because you see all this social media, but you rarely see what people are charging for breaks. Tonight, we're breaking X, but it never actually says what the cost of this break is.
Yeah,
because so they're looking at it only from the spot cost. They're not looking at it from what the total break, if you add in all the spots together, what that equals.
Yeah. And that equals that is a big component of what you're paying.
But here's the thought, Rob, and I want to counter this thought. If you got a small guy that's breaking three cases, he's getting an allocation, he's paying a very low amount, but that's the end of his breaking, the three cases. If you have some of the larger breakers that are breaking 30 or 40 or 50 cases in order to satisfy their customer base, they're going back to secondary market to pay for an uplifted version outside of their allocated cost, so they have to pay the secondary amount. There are times where you and I both have bought boxes in allocation, and we feel good about the profit margin in that. But in order to satisfy customer demand, we have to go back and, well, where do we get it now since we're not getting it from Panini anymore or Topps because we don't have that? We go in the secondary market, and it's like, whoa, I have to pay that much? And when they blend it, it's going to lift the cost per break in that game plan. It's not, again, that's probably why I haven't been such a fan of breaking internally. I mean, I can't say we'll never do it, but for me, it's just not in my business plan at the moment because of how I feel about that, having to go back and hammer people on the price per spot cost.
Right. But, you know, it's funny. We're in the secondary market as soon as a product arrives. Mm-hmm. It's the products just go out the door. People would think we have this massive allocation, and we don't because we're a hobby shop and breakers are the priority at all turns. And, you know,
That's bad. When hobby shops are relegated to second-class citizens to the breakers because we're not buying at the flurry that the breakers are buying, and they look at us going, well, we'll let you know what you can have after we satisfy all the breakers. I mean, do you ever hear something called, well, they call it Breaker's Delight on some of the products now with Tops, and I'm carrying it in my store, and it's just, it's frustrating. I apologize for jumping on the soapbox there on Emil's question, but, you know, as a shop owner, I certainly feel the same way that you feel.
I've been on a soapbox for 34 years, so don't sweat it. It's frustrating because there's no breakers without hobby shops. There's no industry without hobby shops. We're the billboards.
Yeah.
We're the gateway. We're the entry point. No one just discovers, well, not many people just discover a break and that's their first interaction. The vast majority mm-hmm. get involved through the local hobby shop. And you can't say that hobby shop can't sell way more than they're getting. And then all of a sudden you can't get it because everything's going to these breakers that have been in it for 2 years. And again, don't always represent the best side.
Agreed.
Yeah.
So it is what it is. I just, we can't worry about the noise outside of our four walls. We can't worry about decision makers that have been in this business for 6 months, you know, making decisions that, mm-hmm. you know, don't always positively, you know, impact the guys that have been doing this for decades and help build the industry. But it is what it is. We move on and we seem to do pretty well with what we're doing. And we see a lot of customers that are changing their buying habits. And I think that collectors, customers, a lot of their buying habits are based on what they see when they walk into a shop and see things done a certain way that they really enjoy. They might gravitate their spending discretionary income towards what you're showing them. And if all you're showing them is breaking, that might be all that they do. But when they walk into your store and they see how many different things that you do and how passionate you are and how you have the ability to say yes to things that most shops and most breakers say no to, that's a big deal. And my business model really is just saying yes. And you walk in, do you have any San Francisco Giants cards? I'll bring up my website, bring up San Francisco Giants. I might have 25,000 different San Francisco Giants card. Go home, place the order. You can choose in-store pickup as your option. We'll have it to you in a couple of days. That's a gigantic yes. Do you buy cards? Yes, you know, just any question, do you carry these supplies? Whatever it happens to be, the most successful retailers in our space are the ones that can say yes. And from hearing what you're talking about, and my sister lives up in Fairfield, so it's not out of the question that I'm going to stop in your store by surprise one of these days.
I love it. We're ready for you. It doesn't matter whether – you don't have to warn us. Our store is like yours. You walk in and you're going to have a great experience no matter who's working, no matter what time you come in.
Yeah, we have a sign that says happiest place in the hobby in Disneyland font. Waiting to get to it. That hasn't happened yet. But we truly believe that. We have a saying that's the Burbank experience. We hopefully think that it's unique in the industry, or at least unique to us. And it sounds like you're building something in the Bay Area that is quite similar. And obviously you don't have the years behind it, but in the short time that you've had it, you've made a lot more progress than most.
Just to make sure we're correct, we're in the Valley. we're in Sacramento area, not Bay Bay.
Oh.
Yeah, so the Bay can have the Bay, but we're in Sacramento. We service all of San Joaquin and Placer in Sacramento County. So
okay.
I just want to make sure that we're correct on that. It's like me saying, hey, you're in San Diego. I don't want to do that to you. So
yeah.
I know better because my daughter went to Davis. So that was
– There you go.
There you go.
Yeah. It's such a cool community up there.
We love it.
But it's there's a lot more shops that opened, mm-hmm. but a lot of them are just fronts for breaking or just chasing the low-hanging fruit. And it's what you do is difficult. And I always believe that successful businesses in any industry do what's difficult and are able to take it to scale. And I think that you create a barrier to entry that way.
Yeah.
And that you're willing to do the work. You're willing to hire people that are talented. And you're willing to embrace technology. And you're willing to listen mm-hmm. to your customers. What do they want? And if you walk in my store from 2 months ago to today, you're like, holy smoke, I cannot believe the new displays you have. Mm-hmm. We got 41 showcases and they all have signage. What's in these showcases? Mm-hmm. And it's important for a shop to have a roadmap. When you walk in, it could be overwhelming.
Yeah.
And where is everything? We show it on Instagram. We're like, these cards are brand new. This is where they're going to be. And they're going out in 10 minutes. That's huge. And Instagram changed everything. If we could go to that topic, that would be cool.
I know that Emil has some questions. We had talked a little bit about the Burbank Card Show. I know that True Sports Cards, we have a table there. I know Emil's going to consider going to the show.
Yeah.
Rob, this is very important because you have a really big show coming up in February. So go ahead, Emil. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so the Burbank Card Show, it's been referred to, at least I've heard, as the West Coast National, and there are only a few shows I want to actually travel for. Why is it a good idea to travel to the Burbank Card Show? What makes the Burbank Card so special?
Well, I think I have a huge competitive advantage built in. I'm not a genius. I have no idea how to run a card show, mm-hmm. But we have the best market in the country. You know, Jim Beckett will say it's Dallas and people will say New York. I'm like, come on, stop it. Southern California is by far the best market in the country. So we have a huge collector base built in. We have some high dollar collectors and dealers in the area. And it's just been something that started at the Marriott 5 minutes away from me at the airport, where we literally had a line wrapped around the building that we couldn't get people in for like 2 hours. And then we took it to Ontario. We're like, okay, we need to make this bigger. And we took it to Ontario and it sold out and people loved it. And then we're like, let's contact Anaheim. Let's just see what it's about. Take that big leap, see what works. And we actually did it at the Anaheim Convention Center over Labor Day weekend. So within a calendar year, we took it, you know, from a 20,000 square foot show across mm-hmm. from the Burbank Airport to 200,000 square feet, of which 150,000 were used.
Wow.
And people loved it because, A, the Asian community, we're the closest thing. They don't want to fly to L.A., stop over. And no one wants to go to Cleveland, to be honest with you. No one really wants to go to Atlantic City either. Mm-hmm. And we spend the money to put an event into a market that hasn't had a major show. I mean, the National hasn't been in LA since 2006.
Mm-hmm. And I remember going to that one.
Wow.
Yeah. That's
absolutely crazy. And it won't be back until at least 2008 because they've already booked all the facilities through 2027, which seems a really long way away.
And
yeah. Been scaling, and every time we get the best dealers in the country, and we're almost sold. Actually, I think we're sold out of corporate space because every corporate is coming at us with some crazy thing right now, whether it's on-site grading from grading companies not in LA, to companies want to do, you know, bigger activations. So we're in Ontario, California. Always have to mention that because people think we're just showing Canada. It's February 15th through 18th, and we have the whole Ontario Convention Center this time.
Wow.
And if you've been in the facility, it's gorgeous. It is modern. It is beautiful. There's an international airport 5 minutes away. affordable hotel options. And we have the hashtag Cardcation, where we're putting an event where it's not a solitary pursuit where just the collector is going to fly to Cleveland because the family doesn't want to go with them. We're going to put you in Southern California in February where you can escape the weather. We're going to put you in Anaheim, literally across the street from the Mouse, where you're going on this patio where you're watching the fireworks while you're at a card show. And, you know, we think that, you know, we want to become a real viable option to the National, because 95% of the people that walk in my shop are not going to the National. They're not spending thousands of dollars to get on the floor when those thousands of dollars come out of their budget. So
Rob, I don't know. Do you know that I have a 15-month-old son? My one and only. Yep.
Nope.
And his name is Beckett. Okay. Yep. I named my son Beckett. So if you're going to go own a card shop, you might as well go all in. And when Beckett was born, he was born in August of 22. I put on my first show in Rockland, about 60 tables with 15 autographed guests. I did that in November of 22. I did another show, which we've renamed the SAC Autograph Expo. We did it last May, 100 tables, 25 autographed guests. And this May, May 10 through 12, we're going to have another show, a SAC Autograph Expo. It's the largest autograph show in Northern California, and I'm just really proud of it. We're going to have it again. Now, the reason I'm bringing this up is because you had three guests at your show, and here's what I'll never forget. It's just a comment. I know Emil wants to talk about Fanatics, which we will hear in a second, but what cracks me up was you had three guys, Fernando Valenzuela, James Outman, and who's the third one? There was another Dodger. I can't remember who it was.
Mike Socia.
Okay. So people were in line, and you were doing the Rob, the card father thing, Instagram Live. Hey, how's it going? Are you enjoying yourself? Right? Do you know where I'm getting at? There was a grumpy dude, and it was like in the middle of your video, and I was watching it, and the guy's like, I wish there was somebody that knew how to run a card show around here. And he was like screaming, And you were like, hey, thanks for the feedback. And you just moved on. You're like, I don't know what's wrong with that guy. Here's what I've learned. In real estate, other businesses I've been involved with, sports cards, there's always going to be that guy.
Mm-hmm.
There's always going to be that guy that hates your shop because it's too big. They're going to hate your shop because you're too nice. They're going to hate your shop because you have too much selection. They're going to hate your shop because you don't have breaking. There's always that guy or that gal in any scenario that we have to deal with. Rob, how do you handle that? Because for me, I try my best not to read the comments. Because what ends up happening is it takes me off of my mission when I have a game plan. Like, there are card shops, and I know of yours too. We won't have to speak on it right now, but we have card shops that badmouth us because we're doing something that they're not. And they hate the way that we do things, and it's just the way it is. How? Yep. After 30-something years, 40-something years, have you been able to get that thick skin to feel that way about, my mission is this, my customers are most important, I'm not going to listen to that guy, that girl who is complaining at a level that I just can't satisfy no matter what?
Well, first off, sometimes they're right. You know, you can't assume they're wrong. And sometimes I like it when it's constructive and not combative. And sometimes they say something, I'm like, you know something? You're right. Usually it's just wrong and you know it, but you just kind of have to keep smiling and move on. But I think the growth of our business sometimes is listening to someone that's got a constructive criticism. Why don't you do it this way? And you look at it going, you might have just given me a free idea. So you do get the bitter people that complain no matter what you do. That's just human nature. But you know, like that guy in line, honestly, we weren't perfect at that show. Honestly, there was a list of things, and we've had that list of things with every show that we've done, because we've taken each show to a different scale and we've done it in a different facility. So our first show was in Burbank. Our second show was in Ontario, and that was four times the size of Burbank. And our next show was in Anaheim. That was three times the size of Ontario. So we had not done a show in the same location or dealt with the same staffing of that facility. And it caused some different problems. And we make a list every single time, and we try to get, you know, tighter on all those things. So you have to listen to them because they're not all just raging lunatics that just are bitter for no reason, except maybe they're just jealous of your success. But sometimes you're like, you know, that wasn't bad, you know, and I never really thought about it that way.
Rob, we got 4 minutes left. I know Emil has been itching to talk about Fanatics.
I have.
Because you have an insight on it.
I do, yeah. So I like what Mike Rubin's doing so far with Fanatics and the takeover. And you've talked to him personally. But I've heard him say, you know, I want to give the power back to the hobby shop over the distributor. I want to give them more responsibility in the hobby and more, I guess, power. What are your initial thoughts, just like in a minute or less, what are your initial thoughts of what Fanatics is trying to do and how are they going to improve the hobby going forward?
They're going to grow the pie through their marketing. I love the fact that they're selling online. Most people don't. Mm-hmm. I think that there's a much better chance of someone buying their first box on Fanatics.com than it is going into a hobby shop. I feel that getting rid of the distributors is the best thing possible because there's a giant bloat there and they pass the savings, I believe, onto the hobby shops. I do believe that they're very, very hobby shop centric. They're not perfect, but I do think they realize the value. I think that they're letting us jump back into products at affordable rates with their dynamic pricing. Mm-hmm. Whereas before, if you went to get that product back into stock, you would have paid a lot more money through a distributor mm-hmm. than you would through Fanatics. They're not perfect, but they're a much better alternative to the way things are. And they're very new. Most of their people are in 3 months, 6 months, a year. They're listening. I'm a Fanatics fan. I'm not just saying that as a fanboy to kiss anybody's butt. Mm-hmm. I'm doing it because they're the perfect company to have taken over the industry because of their knowledge of sports and the fact that they can put products into places we've all only dreamed of.
Rob, you have been incredible as a guest. I got to say, can we get you back on in the near future, maybe right before the Burbank Card Show? We'd love to have you back on. We could talk more about it. I could talk to you for hours on end, but we only have an hour show. So it's really important that I just say thank you so much for everything that you've done for our industry. You can find him on Instagram, Burbank Cards. You can see Burbank Card Show on Instagram. And then your website, burbankcards.com, correct?
That's right. I appreciate the opportunity. I could do this tomorrow with you, to be honest with you.
I'll come and hang out with you. Every time I come down there, you're in the middle of about to go on a Zoom with somebody important. We happen to be that person today. So thank you so much, Rob. Have a great one, and thanks for all your insight. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Rob.
Cardfather out.
Everybody, thank you so much for joining the True Sports Card Show here on Sactown Sports 1140. Emil, that was an awesome interview. I was very happy. I'm going to get in the car, head over to Concord. Thank you for everybody that's listening. Don't forget to join us at our shop. Come by anytime, 6661 Stanford Ranch there in Rockland. We'd love to see you. And don't forget, next week, the Auburn Card Show held in Loomis at the Blue Goose Center. We'll see you next week. Thanks for tuning in to the True Sports Card Show here on Sactown Sports 1140.
See ya.